Look, it's New Year's tomorrow. Yeah. Everyone's excited. Excellent. Okay. And come this time of the year, I'm thinking about New Year's resolutions, as you do. It seems to be a hot topic. And those promises and goals, you know, when I'm talking about New Year's resolutions, the promises and goals that we set for ourselves for January the 1st and tend to forget about on January the 2nd. And sarcasm aside, I did a bit of digging around just to find out what are some of the most popular resolutions people make at this time of year. And according to Nielsen Research, the top five resolutions tend to be these ones here. It's to stay fit and healthy, to lose weight, to enjoy life to the fullest, and to spend less and save more, and also to spend time with family and friends. These routinely make the top five of people's resolutions for the year ahead. And in general, if you're on Facebook, you can expect your friends and family to populate your newsfeed with stories of resolutions like these. But it's not just the general public that make resolutions for their year ahead. When we look back in church history, there have been well-known Christians too who have resolved to do something, to make a resolution of sorts. And it's a code to live by. It's a way that they shape the way that they spend their time and energy, a way of focusing what they're going to give their lives to. And one such follower of Jesus was an old Puritan. He was a man named Jonathan Edwards. And at a young age, probably around the age of 20 or so, he made a list of resolutions for his life, a way to live committed to the Lord. And he began his resolutions with these words. Keep this in mind. He's a young man. He begins like this: being sensible that I am unable to do anything without God's help, I do humbly entreat him by his grace to enable me to keep these resolutions so far as they are agreeable to his will and for Christ's sake. If you hear nothing else of what I say this morning and you are a resolution-setting kind of person, could you please take those that sentence and just plug it in before you write down what you're going to do? Just a wonderful, wonderful way to start a resolution, committed that we are unable to do anything without God's help, and that whatever resolutions we make, that we ask God to help us to do them insofar as our resolutions are agreeable to his will and for Christ's sake. What a wonderful way to think about starting resolutions. That said, Jonathan Edwards went on and he wrote a bunch of resolutions later in his life. He would add more and more as life went on. But he started his first three resolutions were these. He said, resolved that I will do whatsoever I think to be most to God's glory and my own good, profit and pleasure in the whole of my duration. So as long as I live, to glorify God. Resolved to do whatever I think be my duty, and by that he meant in his time religious duty, and most for the good and advantage of mankind in general. Resolved to do this, whatever difficulties I meet with, how many and how great soever. So he sought to resolve to live a Godward life, setting out a couple of goals to live by. And what I'm getting at is this: whether you look at your Facebook feed or whether you're looking at church history and the great saints of old, what resolutions do for us is they express our deep desire for positive change in our lives. In that regard, I am neither pro nor against resolutions. They can be done well. They can be done well. And resolutions, when they are done well, gives us something new and beneficial to aspire to. But I suppose as a Christian community, we want to ask something more. We want to ask more of resolutions if we do make them. Suppose we were to ask Jesus how we are to go about crafting our resolutions for the year ahead. What kind of resolutions would he consider important for us? If he was with you and he just said, if you had a conversation, Jesus, I want to make some resolutions for my year ahead, what would he say is important for you to give your time and attention to? What would he teach you in that moment when you prayed that prayer? Also, I was mulling this over the last few days. I was particularly drawn to an occasion when Jesus was invited to dinner with some friends. And that's what we find in Luke chapter 10. Listen along as I read this passage for us. Jesus invited to friends for dinner. Luke records for us, "Now as they went on their way, Jesus entered a village, and a woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. And she had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to his teaching. But Martha was distracted with much serving, and she went up to him and said, 'Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Tell her then to help me.' But the Lord answered her, 'Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things, but one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken away from her.'" The scene is very simple. Jesus is at dinner with friends. He's just invited to enjoy some rest and a meal in familiar company. Martha, on this occasion, is resolved. She is resolved to be a good host to her visitor. So much so that as Jesus was enjoying the company of others, Martha was getting caught up in being this good host. She was caught up in her resolution to do the very best she could for her host, that she was beginning to neglect her guest. It tells us this, that Martha was distracted with much serving. Such was her resolve to do it well. It's funny how when we resolve to do something, how devilish our resolution can become, isn't it? Even when we resolve to do good things, sometimes in pursuing the good thing, we forget and we neglect something else that is also important and worthy of our time and attention. And so no doubt Martha's desire to be a good host is commendable. It is a good thing for her to do. Opening our homes and making others feel welcome is a Christian virtue. It is something routinely commended within the Christian community, a practice to cultivate for our lives. And the early Christians knew this. They wrote things like this when they wrote to one another. Romans 12:13, "Contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality." Hebrews, "Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers." Peter, the apostle, wrote this, "Show hospitality to one another without grumbling." Hospitality was a virtue to pursue in the Christian community. And so what Martha was pursuing was a good thing. She was doing a good thing. But the text also tells us that her pursuit of a good thing, like hospitality, also imploded the relationship building that hospitality was supposed to foster. Right? That's what hospitality is supposed to be about. It's supposed to be about relationship building, to get to know people on a deeper level. Hospitality is a means to another end. It's not an end in itself. Hospitality is supposed to serve our relationship building, not become the one central thing in itself. But Martha was losing sight of this. Notice in verse 40, if you have your Bible open, where Martha said this, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Tell her to help me." I don't know if you can imagine what that would have been like to be in that home at that point in time. To be Martha, you know, to just imagine yourself to be Martha. You know, you're setting out to do a very good thing. You're resolved to be a good host, only to feel yourself quite abandoned in that task, quite isolated. I'm doing this all by myself. Doesn't anyone else want to help me? Why is it always on my shoulders? Can you imagine that? Have you ever experienced anything like that? That's what Martha was experiencing. She's just wanting to create a great atmosphere. You know, you hope for the best in these situations. You hope to create a great atmosphere. People would be quite relaxed and chilling out and hanging out. And at the end of the day, the rest that you hope to provide and the good impression you hope to leave with your guests, all that fuss and effort that you went through, and no one seems all that impressed. No one is applauding you. No one is helping you. And in this occasion, not even Jesus seems overly impressed. That's a letdown. But what? What if it is in that very moment when you are trying to hustle Jesus to be on your side, to plead your cause with others, to harness the powers of others to help? What if in that moment where you find Jesus not helping, not taking up your cause, that you actually find Jesus is teaching you something much, much more important? Something about discovering the good resolutions that we have made may not be as important as we think them to be. For Martha, it meant recognizing that her emphasis, her resolve to be a good host, though it was a good thing to do, was always meant to be located secondary to time and attention with Jesus. It was never supposed to be a primary resolution. It was always supposed to be subservient to time and attention with Jesus. That's, I think, what Martha would have learned. For us personally, just on a more personal note, what if it is that when we consider this text, that by the grace that Jesus offers here, he is teaching us how to evaluate our goals, our desires, and our resolutions for the year ahead? What if we are able to learn from Jesus these things? That he is offering us help to set goals that turn out to be much more important than fitness and financial well-being. What if that is what Jesus is seeking to teach us here this morning? We find Jesus offering such guidance to Martha, who was misjudging the importance of hospitality, right? Her resolve for hospitality misjudged. And Jesus is helping her. She needs his mentoring to rediscover something more important. And so do we. We are like Martha, prone to disorder our priorities, prone to make poor resolutions, and we need his mentoring help. So let's enter this moment of mentoring from Jesus together. Let it be Jesus who mentors us in this. Jesus reveals a goal or a resolution that is much more important than the one that Martha had picked for herself, right? She had picked a good thing, but she had not picked the best thing, according to Jesus. Jesus said this, "Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things. Let's just pause on that for a moment. Jesus detected that Mary's resolve, or Martha's resolve for hospitality, had made her anxious, right? Have you been around people like that who are just anxious about a resolve that they've made in their lives? They become quite troubled about seeing that resolve through. Note this, even a good resolution that we make, a good goal that we set, can engulf and overtake our lives, becoming our masters. They become so consuming that we will pour endless time and energy into worry, anxiety, and troubling ourselves over seeing that goal come to fruition. And so even good things can become poor masters of our lives. And so Jesus is detecting this. Jesus is able, wisely, to see that Martha is troubling herself and becoming anxious about something she need not be troubled or anxious about. Not to that degree, anyway. But isn't it so like Jesus, not only to tell us what's going wrong, you know, what is the wise word for our lives to correct us again? It's so often when Jesus prods us to see something truer and more beautiful, he doesn't just leave the room, says, hey, this is what you stuffed up in your life, I'm out. He doesn't do that. He tells us what's wrong, but he also gives us wisdom to help us reorientate ourselves on the good we're supposed to pursue. And he does this. He offers this kind of mentoring to Martha, and he reveals a way forward to her. He says to her, one thing is necessary. Here's what's going wrong in your life, Martha. Anxious and trouble have revealed where things are going wrong. Here's another way. Here's one other thing that you need. Just one simple truth that you need to embrace. So what is this one thing, Jesus? You know, tell us this one thing. It seems to be the key to it all. What is it? The one thing that Jesus was talking about is key to making better resolutions in our lives. And if making better resolutions for 2018 is on your mind this morning, I invite you to receive the mentoring that Jesus offers here. What is necessary? What is this necessary thing Jesus commends? Jesus directs our attention to someone else. He tells us about Mary. He tells us about this one thing. He says that Mary has chosen the good portion. That's good. Evidently, whatever Mary was doing was the one thing, the good portion. And what Mary was doing, according to verse 39, is sitting at the Lord's feet, listening to his teaching. And Jesus' assessment of things, giving time and attention to his words, to his teaching, is the one necessary thing. It's the first thing he would have us remember when we are getting our list out for 2018. If you were to pray a prayer to Jesus, Jesus, help me set resolutions for the year ahead, you will find Jesus drawing you to primary things like this, necessary things like this, to listen to his teaching. This may catch some of us by surprise. It may catch us by surprise that Jesus would commend some kind of goal setting. For one, it catches us by surprise, because for many of us, we go into 2018 with a list of resolutions that looks an awful lot like the Nielsen research. We want fitness, we want health, we want more savings, and we want less spending, and we want better family relationships. So we make our lists that looks a lot like the Nielsen research says we would. And so we are surprised to find Jesus tell us that something else is more important than our top five. So we're surprised Jesus would enter our lives that way. For others, we're surprised by Jesus because we don't believe in goal setting. We do not believe in making lists because we have seen the research. We have known research that says to us that up to 88% of people who set goals for the new year will end in failure. That is a high rate of non-success. So we've seen the stats and we're like, why bother setting any kind of goals when most of the goals we set end up on the tip? And to both these kinds of reactions, be it both these ways that we might be surprised at what Jesus is doing here, Jesus would commend nonetheless Mary for listening to his teaching. Jesus alerts us to the fact that her goal, her resolve, is of such a nature that it will not be taken away from her. I want you to note those words. The reason her goal and her resolution to sit quietly listening is so highly commended is because Jesus sees it of eternal value. She got it right. She gave her time and attention to the most important thing at that time. The benefit which she will gain from her activity of listening to Jesus is not temporary but eternal. And at this point, perhaps Jesus would ask you to consider your goals, and even if they are good goals, Jesus would ask you to consider whether the goals you are setting, do they fall under a category of things which he would consider things that can be taken away from you? Because what Mary chose could not be taken away from her. So I'm asking you, look at your goals for this year. Are they things that can be taken away from you? And if they can, are they really that important? They might be good and they might be worth pursuing, but are they so important that you're willing to get all anxious and troubled by them? Are they worth the proportion of anxiety and trouble that you're willing to invest? And if so, have you made time to account for Jesus in your list of priorities and goals for 2018? Does Jesus appear on your list anywhere? Does giving time and attention to his teaching, a little bit of Bible reading perhaps, are you hoping for more of that in 2018? That sincere endeavor to know him through his word, which according to Jesus will not be taken away from you. Will you make trouble? Or will you take the trouble to make room for Jesus in your life this coming year? See, Jesus will challenge us this way. He will challenge both goal-setting people and non-goal-setting people. He will challenge us to think about the true importance of our goals and to judge our own goals, whether we judge them to be very important. Jesus would just ask us, will you give time and attention to me? And to those who don't bother setting goals, Jesus will just ask you, will your slackness about not goal setting or organizing any time for him in the year coming, will that benefit you? Will you be any better off for setting no goals, including no hope for spending more time with Jesus this year? Will that benefit you any better? Will it prepare you any more to understand and love the gospel? Will it offer you any preparedness to hope more for the future which he offers? Will it shape you any more into the authentic Jesus-following community which we claim to be? So Jesus would just challenge us this way. Have we made time for him, deliberate time for him this year ahead? Because it's the one goal, it's the necessary thing, which will not be taken away from us. So in closing, I just want to ask you, when you think about the year ahead, can you think about this grid when you go to do paperwork, when you are looking at lists of your list of 1, 2, 3s, 4s and 5s, or what, however you do it, can you look through this grid? Can you assess that which you set goals for, which are important, and that which may be necessary? Can you distinguish between the two? Can, next to each one of your goals, can you just say, this is important, but this is actually necessary? I think this is the kind of thing Jesus was teaching Martha to think about. Yes, hospitality is important, but what is necessary? Spending time listening to Jesus. And if nothing else, maybe you have no list to go home to, no goals that you have set. I don't tend to send New Year's goals like this, but I still have something to learn from Jesus here. He would ask, would you just put one thing on your list? Would you just start a list with one thing on it? And let that one thing be this. To be like Mary. Would you be like Mary? Would you be humble before Jesus? And would you give time and attention to his teaching? Just one goal, one necessary thing to enter the new year with.